Thank you for the introduction. My name is Haralambos Poulis, or Haris for short, and I will be talking about the automatic creation of massive virtual cities. So first of all, why do we need these 3D models? Well, recently there has been an increasing demand for applications which employ 3D model representations of the real world in a virtual environment. And first of all, we have virtual reality. And several applications have already successfully applied the employed 3D models. For example, disaster simulations of man-made or natural events. You can see there at the lower left side, a cataclysmic event of Baltimore. So that's a natural event simulation. It has been used for personnel training, military or emergency response training. You can see the lower right image, military training using 3D models to represent actual places in the real world. And this has already been used to train soldiers prior to the deployment. And as we heard today from Skip's presentation, it's being used as well once they get back for post-traumatic stress disorder. So, and lastly, urban development and planning, which means before you even build a building, you can actually visualize it in the surroundings and see if there are any issues or anything wrong with the new building. Secondly, computer graphics, my personal favorite, games and feature films. There has been a shift in the direction of the use of the 3D models. People don't want fictional worlds anymore. They'd rather have copies of the real world, like miniature versions of them. Here you can see a video that I got from YouTube from some guys at UCL. They actually used SketchUp to manually reconstruct the entire London, or a big area of London, and they have used the game Crysis to display the model, as you can see in the video. Different applications, surveillance for situational awareness. We have our very own at USC augmented virtual environment. So what this means, instead of having different panels, different monitors to view at, it's better if you visualize everything, all this information, in a dynamic way in a 3D environment. So to do that, we use 3D models. This is an area in Washington. So you use a 3D model to project streaming video cameras as textures. So you get a dynamic feel of what's going on at all times without having to flip between the monitors. And finally, you have the geographical information systems. I'm pretty sure everybody knows Google Earth or Microsoft Virtual Earth. Both of these GIS systems, they use 3D models in combination with other geospatial attributes, restaurant information, etc., to create this miniature version of the world. And most recently, we have the GPS navigation devices, which are trying to migrate all these 3D models on the GPS device. So while you drive, you can not only see the road, but you can also see the 3D buildings as they appear in front of you. So you know exactly where you are. So everybody wants these 3D models because they provide a compact representation of the real world and in large scale for large scale areas. And of course, it's a 3D model. It requires no maintenance. This is in contrast to the, for example, in the military, they use the MOUTs, the military operations in urban terrains. They sort of build a mock-up city and then they train in there. This one has no maintenance if you use it in a VR environment. And of course, it provides can be used in a controlled environment to simulate different scenarios. So you can damage as many buildings as you want. The only thing you have to do is just press reset once you're done and everything is back up again. So everybody wants these 3D models. However, it's a very complex, a very expensive, and a very slow process. It still is. So the current state of the art, there's a huge gap between the current state of the art and the desired goal, which is the rapid automatic reconstruction of large-scale areas. So there has been a plethora of papers in this area. It's been around. Everybody has been trying to model the world for the past 20, 30 years now. It can be better categorized into three groups. You have the manual techniques, which require from scratch to build using blueprints or some kind of information to build the actual structures. Then you have the semi-automated techniques, which provide some kind of primitives or combine other information such as point clouds to drive the process. And most recently have the automatic techniques, which are automatic, of course. And you have different variants of automatic techniques, and I'll talk about that. So in this work, we're focusing on modeling from airborne LiDAR data. For those who don't know, LiDAR stands for light detection and ranging. It's like radar, but instead of a radio signal, it emits a laser beam. So the device emits a laser beam, it hits the object, interacts with the object, and then returns back. So measuring the time of flight it took to go and return back, you can actually get an estimate of the distance of the object from the device. So this is the data we've been using. The advantage is that you get a moderate accuracy, which means moderate level of details. And of course, it's scalable because it can capture large scale areas. You can see an example here of that downtown Atlanta. That's just point data captured by an airplane. So the device is actually attached on the airplane. The limitation, of course, is because of the direction of the capturing process, which is vertical to the Earth's ground. You get no building facades, so it's just going to look like a flat polygon. So we propose a system which consists of three different modules, pre-processing. So what we get from the vendor company that captures the data is just an unstructured 3D point cloud, and we need to structure it and subdivide it into manageable components, right, to feed into memory. There are different parameters we have to take into account. We do that using resampling and hole filling. The second step, once we do the resampling and we structure everything, we still have to segment it into different components. So we use a region segmentation technique to do that. And finally, once we do have the regions, we can extract the boundaries and then finally extract the geometry. That's what we're interested in. So the first step is the pre-processing. So the input to this module is the unstructured 3D point cloud. It's huge in size. Just to get an idea, most of these data sets are in the order between 10 gigabytes to 18 gigabytes of just XYZ data. So it's impossible to load it into a normal computer for us. And it may contain holes because the airplane just flies different sweeps. So there may be spots that were not covered. So we perform the pre-processing in two steps. First is the resampling to structure the 3D point cloud, and then once we structure it, then we perform a hole filling process. And the output is a 2D XYZ map. So let's see the first step. It's the resampling. We convert the data into 2D XYZ maps. An XYZ map is the internal data representation that we have chosen. It's basically an image, but instead of a red, green, and blue channel, RGB, you get X, Y, and Z channel for the position of points. So the 2D representation allows us for faster to use fast image processing techniques, which means faster computational times. So the size of this map is ideally we would want to minimize information loss by keeping all samples in the data. However, this is not feasible. Therefore, we have to decide on the size, either on the size of the map or the error tolerance between neighboring samples. And finally, we perform a hole filling to fill in any small holes. So this is an example of what it looks like. So you get a 3D point cloud data. This is what it looks like in 3D, just a bunch of points, no structure or anything. And then this is what the resampling, the pre-processing returns, just an image where instead of RGB, you have XYZ. So the second step, we resampled everything, we structured everything, we can load it into the memory, the whole thing, but it's still, it contains a complete representation of the scene, including everything, so we don't know which is which. So we need to segment into different components. So the input here is the 2D XYZ maps, and the output is the regions and boundaries. So this is performed in three steps. First, we compute a normal for each of the XYZ, each point in the XYZ maps, using the local neighborhood information. And then using the normal information and depth information, we perform a region growing variant algorithm while keeping statistics for each region to break the scene into disjoint contiguous region. For more details, please refer to the paper. I'm not going to go into details about that. And finally, once we do get the regions, the segmented regions, we can extract the boundaries. So this is what it looks like, the region segmentation. On the left side, you can actually see a color-coded segmented result. So points with the same color are in the same region. The colors may be repeated. And this is the actual area, this satellite image from Google Earth. And you can see that the segmentation is doing a pretty good job. It's robust to variations while it preserves the important details. You can see the building over there, all these details that are carried over to the segmentation. Now, to our knowledge, you know, existing segmentation techniques will either over-segment or over-smooth the data. Also, something to note is that this region segmentation has no thresholds whatsoever. It's all probabilistic in nature, has only one free parameter to set, which is not data dependent, and it's fixed for all the results that I'll be showing. So that is what's new about this technique. So, of course, we have tested that extensively with different data sets, different parts of U.S. cities. You can see it performs pretty well. Even minor details such as, I don't know where I'm putting it, such as over here there's a crane of some sort. I can see it on my monitor, but not over there. It's in that area anyway. You know, points with similar geometric properties are grouped together, and it seems to be working very well. So once we get the segmentation, the segmented regions, then we extract the boundaries. You can once again verify the accuracy of our segmentation. This is satellite image of the building, and then the segmentation result for that building. And then from that, we get the blue points are actually the contours. Finally, we have the regions. We have the boundaries of the regions, and we also have the depth information and the normals for each of the points inside the region. So we perform a surface fitting. At this point, we're only dealing with linear, rather, we're assuming that all the surfaces are linear, so we perform a linear surface fitting to get the 3D models and then extrude them to the ground, and we get 3D models. Okay, enough talk. Let's see the results. So as I said, we have extensively tested this. You can see this is downtown Baltimore and surrounding areas. This is the input data, resampled input data, LiDAR, and then this is the reconstructed 3D data. This is a close-up. Again, you can see the building that we talked about before. It's that guy over there. You can see the detail. Also, I should mention that we don't know what we're reconstructing. As long as it's in the data, it will be reconstructed. So it should come as no surprise if you see boats over here. This is a marina, so it just got reconstructed as well as part of the whole process. So this is a 16 square kilometer area that was fully automatically, no user interaction whatsoever, reconstructed on a single computer in 11 hours. So the output of this is just lightweight, watertight, polygonal 3D models that can be used in a variety of different applications. And as I said, the main purpose of this is to downsize the data and make it usable, so the models have to be lightweight enough to be used in very complicated simulations such as disaster simulations like this one, or even a worst scenario where you have a cataclysmic event like flood the entire Baltimore. I tried to make it look like water, but it looks like oil. I don't know why. So. All right. So again, we have tested this extensively. We have reconstructed more than like 5 or 6 cities so far. And this is downtown Atlanta. Now, you may notice the vertical lines and the horizontal stripes. That's caused from the resampling process. We said we subdivide the data into different XYZ maps. So each map you see over here is 2K by 2K in size and gets reconstructed separately from any neighboring maps. So important to note here is that there is no information sharing between the different maps. So although they get reconstructed separately, you can see that if a building falls on a boundary between two maps, you get two equivalent 3D models in the results of those two maps. So again, this shows the robustness of the segmentation result. You can see the roads continue from one cell to the other one, the buildings in the downtown as well. This was one of the biggest areas, 28 square kilometers, took 13.5 hours to reconstruct on a single computer. I mentioned that we're using the XYZ maps, no information sharing, which means this process is highly parallelizable, and I ran out of time and I did not have enough time to do the parallel processing, but you can do each tile on a different processor. So that's going to speed up the processing time as well. Okay, let's move on to the next one. So Auckland, the same. Once again, you can see that what starts in one tile continues in the next one. There's no, you know, for the buildings over here downtown, you can see that there's a stripe. This is 17 square kilometers. It requires 7 hours to compute. So the variation in the time is caused by the actual properties of the area where we're constructing. The worst case scenario for our algorithm, because it's a region growing algorithm that keeps track of statistics, if you have one huge chunk of flat area, that's going to slow things down a lot. But if you have a lot of houses, a lot of stuff, then it speeds up the process because the regions have relatively small size. And final Denver data. Okay, you can see a close-up over here. Just have a look. Pay attention to the center over here, to the big buildings over there and all that. This is, again, a fully automatically reconstructed model. I want you to compare this with the manually constructed 3D models of Google Earth. Okay, it looks nicer with the texture, but, you know, if you compare the two, you can see that it gets a lot of detail. So, yes, it's not last. So, all right. So finally, the evaluation, it's very difficult. We have no ground truth. There's no blueprint for all the buildings. So we use different qualitative and quantitative evaluation in terms of the following parameters. Completeness, we measure the number, we count the number of model buildings, compare them to the actual number of buildings there. Quality, so we visually inspect the models. Georeferencing means that we get ground, oblique, aerial, and satellite images, and then we line them up to the models. So if the geometry is correct, then the error should be minimal when reconstructing this. And of course, correctness, we measure the fitting error. And you can see here the reduction that we can get, it's in the high 90s for each of the data sets that I've shown. And for this particular part over here, you can see the statistics over here. So it's a 97.5% reduction in the polygon count, which is huge in the... All right, so of course, scalability, the most important. We measure how long it takes to process and reconstruct entire cities. So to conclude, we have presented an automatic technique for the extraction of polygonal 3D models from LiDAR data. We generate lightweight polygonal 3D models that can be used in a variety of applications, even the most complicated ones. And of course, we have proposed a new segmentation technique, which is robust to variations, while it preserves details and has no data dependencies other than the one free parameter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.